all the fun guesses, but no one has got it, so still keep sending those in that I wanted to share. I have a Reiki level 1 training and attunement Yoga Bliss in Akron, and as you know, Reiki is the first step to heal thyself. It's just really a way to really enhance and raise your vibration and connect with your energy. And as you know, we all need that right now. We all need to really raise our vibration and be mindful of where we're at and where we're headed. For the Booty Workshop, which is February 10th, it's like a Valentine's Day, so if any of you listeners are local, I would love to see you there. It's all women's empowerment, primal, tribal, connecting to that, you know, Kundalini any questions, any sessions that you would like to book with me, Reiki, that website's Adventures. I interviewed Julie Ryan quite a few weeks ago. Actually, hearing her on another podcast, she has this book called Angelic. As we transition from this life into the next. Moments. A few other books that I'll list down at the bottom. She has a podcast which is called An International Podcast. She's an author, radio show host, podcaster, and entrepreneur. Every Thursday, and she answers questions live, and she's able to heal. Amazing. For you guys to hear this, stay tuned until the end where she is sharing a free gift with all. And a free digital and audio book of all that, where she will send that to you. If her listening to her on another podcast, it was after my mom passed, probably 2 months, I don't even know. But I remember seeing the podcast and not listening to it because I saw it was about what happens after death. I wasn't ready to listen to it, and then it popped back up a few months later, and as I was listening to it, exactly what I was telling my mom, and because my mom's place wasn't safe for me, so I wasn't fully comfortable, but I was just trying to help ease her. But anyway, I won't get into it, but it was just one of those aha moments for me that was like, okay, Amber, time to own your shit and own your gifts. And like, this is not a coincidence that this happened. So I'm super excited to share this with you. She shares so much good information and, you know, shares her story and how you can really tap into your gifts, your power. So take a listen. Make sure to listen all the way to the end where she shares her benefit from it. Definitely, definitely share so much goodness in it. Thank you. And remember, when you awaken you.
of Adventures and Awakening. I am your host, Amber. Today, I am on with the lovely Julie Ryan. Julie is a psychic and medical intuitive. She is the author of several books, one of those being Angelic Attendants, What Really Happens as We Transition from This Life into the Next. Julie, you wear many hats. You have a podcast as well, which I love. And thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me. What a delight.
Yes. So I want to share with listeners real quick how I found and discovered you. So before we head into your awakening story, my mother passed actually 5 months ago today. And about 2 months after her passing, I was working out in the gym of my home and was listening to this podcast. And I had seen the podcast like right after she passed, but I was like, no way am I going to listen to that. It would be too triggering. I wasn't ready to hear it. So it was a day where I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to this. And I'm working out, listening to the podcast where you were on Inspire Nation. And I don't know if it was a replay or not, but what you said on the podcast and what you wrote in your book, Angelic Attendants, is exactly what I said to my mom. Like almost verbatim, she was close to crossing over and I went into a meditation and I did not see with my third eye or my actual eyes. I just could feel it. But typically I do see energy with my eye, you know, both ways. But that wasn't necessarily a safe space for me to fully drop in. And I stopped working out and just sat on the floor of our gym and listened to the rest of the podcast, because it was one of those moments where it was a smack in the face to me from spirit saying, Amber, you have to fall. Like, it was just like, I had goosebumps all over of like, that was an affirmation, that I was helping her transition and that I was plugged in. So I'm so excited that you're here today.
Oh, what a wonderful story, which is the whole purpose behind the work that I do, Amber, is to bring comfort to people. On my show, which is now a syndicated radio show throughout the country on talk radio, as well as a podcast and YouTube and all of that. And just 3 weeks ago, we went into regular radio with our first round with, it's got an audience of 55 million people. So it's about getting this information out that it helps take the fear out of death and dying for people. I find that there's a lot of information out there about afterlife and near death experiences, but not so much about what happens when somebody dies. Mm-hmm. And it's been really a remarkable, fun journey to see where this information is going, and so heartwarming to hear the stories like yours of how this information comforts people.
Mm-hmm. And then I was like thinking today, I didn't even realize it was the 5 month. And I was like, how odd. There's no coincidence that, you know, of course, this is the day we picked to do the interview. So I love that. Can you share with my listeners kind of your story, how you landed to where you are right now in this moment?
Sure. I'm an inventor and an entrepreneur. So I'm a businesswoman who learned how to do woo-woo, and I'm a buffet of psychicness. Mm-hmm. How's that for an
I love
elevator,
it.
elevator pitch? Which means that I have invented surgical devices sold throughout the world and founded 9 companies in 5 industries in 30 years. And I sold a couple of companies several years ago. And I thought, okay, what's my next adventure? And it was a few years after my mother had died. And I was being led to write a book about what happened, what transpired with all of this. And it, frankly, it took me a few years to get enough golden ovary courage to come out of the closet, if you will, on this, because I'm a businesswoman. I thought people are going to think I'm nuts, and I didn't want it affecting my companies. So when I sold several of them, I thought, okay, all right, you know, what the heck? And I just kept being led and led and led. And it's really ended up being, I've been doing this for 5 years now, pretty much full time. And it's just grown at an amazing rate. And And as I mentioned, the lives that I get to touch in a small way, bring them comfort from people around the world. It's really been fun to meet them and really heartwarming to be able to be a very tiny, small part of their lives.
You definitely have several gifts. And I know from reading the book, part of the book, that you weren't like born with them. Well, we were, but you definitely have. Can you kind of play into that, how you developed your psychic awareness, how all of that came about?
Sure. You're right. I laugh at Isaiah. I wasn't a psychic who was born with dead people chasing her since childhood, or if I did, I didn't know it, let alone right. what I would have done with that information. And probably a little over 30 years ago, I had a friend give me a book by Carolyn Mace called Anatomy of the Spirit. Mm-hmm. And I read it, and she calls herself a medical intuitive. And I had been in the hospital supply industry at that point for several years and was interested in helping people heal from the supply side of the equation. And I thought, what's a medical intuitive? I'd never heard that term before. So I was interested in reading her book. And then back then we didn't have the internet yet. So mm-hmm. I did the old fashioned thing and I went to a bookstore and I thought, I'm going to see if there's anything there that I can find that will give me more information on this. And I did. And I found a book called Hands of Light by Barbara Brennan. Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Brennan is a former NASA physicist. She just passed recently, in the past couple of months, I believe. She was a former NASA physicist who parlayed very complex quantum physics principles into understandable English for the non-scientific mind. That would be me. And I thought, okay, I want to know more. So I called her school and I said, do you guys have anybody teaching this stuff where I live? And lo and behold, they did. And so I studied it for 6 years, paid the equivalent of what it would have cost for me to get a PhD or an MD. And my friends and family at the time were saying, why are you doing this? I mean, I did it part-time. It wasn't like I was in school all day. I was a wife and a mom and a businesswoman and running companies and doing all the things that come with a busy life. But I was really led to learn this stuff. And people would say, why are you doing this? And I'd say, I don't know. And they'd say, well, what are you going to do with it? I said, I have no clue if I'll ever do anything with it. Mm-hmm. I'm just interested. And that's how it all began.
And so it was just a little whisper that you kept following?
It was, yes. And I find that that's how we're led. We're interested in something. We want to know more. It's fun learning it. We're mm-hmm. willing to jump through some hoops, time-wise, money-wise, perhaps, to learn this information. And now I live in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm in the deep South. And they would say, darling, you were led. Because I'm from Ohio, you like you. Yeah, originally.
So it started with that training and then you just kept going and your gifts kept developing as the more you opened up and...
Yeah, I used my skills on family and friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'd do a healing on somebody or I'd whatever. And then in 2002, when my mother was dying in mm-hmm. Columbus, Ohio, that was the first time I'd been around anybody, Amber, firsthand, who was dying, anybody close to me, anybody, period, for that matter. I mean, I'd lost a grandmother, two grandmothers by that point, but I wasn't there. And we did the funeral and all that jazz. But I was with my mother as she was dying. And we drove all night from Birmingham to Columbus to get there to be with her. She was in a hospice facility in Columbus. And we walked in and the nurses said, well, she's coming from the hospital, so she's going to be very well hydrated. She'll probably last at least a couple of weeks. I said, okay, fine. So we were there, my whole family, my siblings and my dad and the spouses and my son and my nephews. And as the day progressed, I started seeing these configurations of angels and deceased loved ones and the spirits of deceased pets start to gather. And I thought, and they were assuming a certain structure, like there was a sequence to how they were positioned, and that sequence was changing. And the nurses continue to say, she's going to be around quite a while, so just buckle up, buckle in. And I thought, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. And she ended up passing the next morning at 5 a.m. I was the only one with her. I stayed with her during the night. Everybody else went home to get some sleep. And it was this configuration kept changing. More and more spirits were arriving. And these were spirits of people who were deceased loved ones, people I'd never met, great grandparents, people like that I'd seen in pictures, but I'd never met them. Other people who'd been dead for 20 or more years that I perhaps knew in my childhood and hadn't thought of since they died for 25 years. I was like, holy Moses, you know, so-and-so's here and so-and-so's here. And then when the pets that we had when I was a child were, their spirits were there, and pets that my mother had as a child that, again, I had never met, but had seen pictures of. Couple of them, my uncle, her only sibling at the funeral, I was describing these different dogs, and he said, oh yeah, that's Rowdy, and that's so-and-so, and that's, he could name.
Wow.
And so it was really, it added a glorious component to a heart-wrenching situation, because it was very unexpected that she was dying. And it just amazed me. And then when I went to the funeral, when we attended the funeral, I was raised Roman Catholic, Amber. And at the end of every Roman Catholic funeral, there's a prayer said or a song called In Paradisum. And it talks about how your loved ones, your deceased loved ones, will greet you and lead you into paradise. And I thought, holy Moses, that's what I saw. And I heard that prayer really from a different perspective. So fast forward, I did that with several other family members, and not in my family, but friends who had a loved one who was dying, and all of that helped them. I could tell how close to death they were based on this configuration that I have come now to call the 12 phases of transition. And then how it really got published was one day I was with my mentor in Nashville, and she was doing a healing on me. And when she's doing a healing on me, I'm face up on a massage table, and there are my deceased loved ones' spirits and my dog, Katie, her spirits in the room. And they're all helping with the healing. I can see them. They line up on either side of the table. And one day this dead Pope showed up with this whole Pope outfit on. And I said to him, the hat, you know, the pointy hat that the Pope wears, the whole nine yards. And I said to him, well, who are you? And he said, I'm Clement. And I said, I never heard of a Pope Clement. He said, well, I was number six. And he was kind of chuckling, and said, okay, may I help you? And he said, yeah, you're supposed to teach the world what happens when somebody dies. And I said, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm a businesswoman. People are going to think I'm nuts.
Right.
And he said, yeah. Everything you've done in your life is to prepare you for this. And you know what happens, and you know that it's glorious, and it's been so bastardized throughout the millennia. People are afraid, and there's no reason for them to be afraid. And so he said, yeah, just get on with it. Just, you know, just go do it. So I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. So I left, Amber, got in the car, and just for kicks, I did an internet search on my phone on Pope Clement VI. Well, come to find out, this guy was in office during the Black Plague, when two-thirds of Europe died, and he's best known for his prayers for the dying and his prayers for the dead. And I thought, oh my God, Ryan, you can't make that up.
Right.
And so that, and then it took me a couple more years to get the courage to get the golden ovary courage, I like to say.
Golden ovary.
You know, guys have breast balls, girls have golden ovaries.
That's a good one. I like that. Yeah.
So I live in the South. I thought, I'm going to have men on horseback wearing white hoods burning a cross in my front yard.
Right.
But it has been the exact opposite. There are churches and synagogues of all denominations around the country that give my book to everybody that comes in to plan a funeral. My parish, my Catholic parish, is one. And it's been really remarkable how many people tell me, either in an email or when they call into my show, they'll say, I give your book to people when they lose a loved one. To your point earlier, it's comforting when you know, okay, this is what happened when my mom died or when whoever died. May I make a comment about that? You didn't see it, but you could feel it.
Yes.
Yeah. I'd love to hear what you felt, but go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Yeah. But sometimes when we're in grief, our vibration level is a little bit lowered and spirit communicates as a very high vibration. So it makes sense to me that even in your grief, as your mother was passing, you were able to feel it, but not necessarily see it because grief is a low vibration. And I always say spirits are really high vibration and spirit doesn't communicate on the I feel crappy channels because the vibration's too low. It's like you're tuned to a different radio station.
Absolutely.
And so I believe that's what was going on when your mom was dying.
So I will say I've been with, I want to get into the configuration, but I've been with my grandmother, my grandfather, both while they were passing. And my grandmother was like my best friend, my person, closer to her than anyone. When she died, it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen. Then I was about 20 years old and she waited for me to say to go. And I saw, that was the first time I saw energy. I saw her spirit leave the body. And then when my grandpa passed a few years later, I saw, I knew that his spirit had left before he actually like fully passed. With my mom, it was another, it was different. I think because I didn't, one, her home was not like a safe space for me. So I just wanted to be as comforting as possible, which is probably why I didn't see it, as I wasn't also 100% comfortable. And I was really grieving, just trying to hold space and help her cross over. So, but everything, the feeling that I had in my body, I'm definitely a feeler, you know, I can feel like someone's energy before they even walk into a room. When I was talking to her and transitioning, it was the most peaceful. It was really peaceful. However, it was like my body was just a vessel. I had no idea what I was saying. You know, does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
yes, spirit works through us and with us. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. And I said to her, I said, Mom, grandma's right there on your left waiting for you. She's got you. And then I walked through everything you said, like you have all our relatives, you have people you don't even like know here. There's angels. And I went through the whole thing. It was just like, ugh, wow, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is that it's hilarious when different spirits and end up coming in and joining, I call it the Welcome to Heaven Committee, and they're from all lifetimes. So I'll see them in different period dress. There may be somebody from the Renaissance and I expect them to whip out a turkey thigh or something and start turkey leg and start eating on it. Like you see at those Renaissance festivals, you know, like here, let me get my turkey leg out of my pocket. And I see people from other eras and I can tell when they're from, or at least I get an idea based on how they're dressed. I love it when I see 1960s people and they're dressed like Mad Men or go-go boots and mini skirts and things like that. And I think it's important to remember that these are ancestors and these are also friends and family from multiple lifetimes. And there's so many in the room at the time of departure, Amber, that they look like dots on the horizon. It's it's really remarkable. May I share a quick story about a guy that sent me an email?
Yes.
He was with his grandfather when he died. And so we were, now he didn't send me an email. He told me this in person. He was, or not person on the phone. He was a client. And he said, when we were talking with his father spirit, who's in heaven now, said, you know, the thing about it, because the son was asking, how was the transition for you? Kind of wanted details. And the father spirit said, it was like a magic act. He said, all these spirits were in the room and I could see them. And then when I got to heaven, they were all there, like right on the other side of the pearly gates. He called it the pearly gates. He said, it was like a magic act when they put the woman in the box and they spin the box a few times and then they open the lid and the woman's not there. He said it was great. So I think it's important to remember that spirit is pure love and joy, and it's fun. So there's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of those good feeling emotions that help to negate the heartbreak that we feel from our human perspective.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, when you see, do you see with your third eye or your physical eyes or both?
Both.
Okay.
Both. When I am first connecting to somebody, for instance, if I'm going to scan them medically, I'm like a human MRI. I'll close my eyes for a moment just to connect into them. And then I'll envision shooting energy through them. And then something always shows up, and then there's a healing, then something else shows up, and then there's a healing. But normally when I start to scan something, I'll close my eyes even just for a couple of seconds. It helps me focus, and there's mm-hmm. there are less distractions.
Okay. And then like you have the ability to turn it on and turn it off.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's what I teach.
Okay. Because for me, like if I'm at a grocery store or out in public, I typically won't really see energy, but if I'm at a yoga studio or somewhere maybe more high vibrational where I'm more comfortable, then I will sometimes see aura or energy behind a person. But it's usually not like in a big public setting.
Well, that's just because you're distracted. If you closed your eyes for a few seconds and just focused on what you want to do, you would be able to see it in any setting. By the way, your aura is just massive around the way the windows, the light's coming in the window. I mean, it goes out. I can see the outline of your chair.
Wow.
If you look at this video, when we finish, you'll be able to see it. It's very cool.
Cool. Thank you.
I don't walk around scanning people because I think it's unethical.
Right.
I think it's an invasion of their privacy. And the other point about being in the yoga studio is the vibe is high and your brain is relaxing on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So we're so busy during the day. And that's, I believe, a lot of the reason why spirits come to us in dreams, because our brains have had a little bit of time to relax and we reset our vibration back to the default setting that comes when we're born, which is pure love, which is spirit, which is really high. So spirit can communicate with us when we're on the same high vibration, because it's like we're tuned to the same radio station or TV station.
Yes. Do you, I would like you to kind of walk through, without giving the entire book away, the configuration as well as the transition stages of death. So I know for me, it took my, you know, it was a long transition for my mother. And so after like the first day when I kind of, she wasn't ready, but I walked her through, this is what I believe is going to happen. You can come back. You're not your body, da, da, da. And then I saw my grandma, you know, I told her that whole thing with like, grandma's here. That night I went to sleep and I had a dream where my grandma came for my mom. And in the dream, my mom said, Amber, it's better than you imagine. You were right. Like, it's better than even what you said, da, da, da. The next morning, I woke up and was getting my coffee at the sink, and I look out the window, and there are two male cardinals together, which is my cardinal symbol for my grandma. And so I was like, she is coming. She's with, like, that was my confirmation. So I went back to my mom's house the next day, and the only time she was, like, talking, she popped up and said, she's like, mom's here with me. She's going to give me pizza. And then she was out of it the whole rest of the day, like non-responsive. And so I was like, wow, that was, I just had to share. They do. Well, they come in dreams.
Yeah. Well, and grandma probably was saying, honey, when you get to heaven, you can have all the pizza you want. But the part that she left out is you're not going to want it because you don't have a body, so you don't need to eat.
Right.
It's kind of a thing. Yeah. Well, and it's just glorious. But to your point, the mother spirit, the one that's closest, the closest maternal spirit to the person who's dying, is always the one that runs the show in the spirit world as somebody's transitioning. That surprised me. Did that surprise you as well?
No, it didn't, because I feel like
women are powerful and we're divine and we have that, of course we would be the ones there.
I kind of thought it'd be like God had a department in heaven that was air traffic control. Okay. You know, Mary Jo Ryan's getting ready to transition. So we need to send her angels down and kind of dispatch the angels and all that. That I even thought perhaps it would be the person's guardian angel. They're there, but it's the maternal spirit. So if our mother is still alive, it's going to be our maternal grandmother. If she's still alive, it's going to be her mother on up the maternal line. And I find it interesting that in ancient cultures, Judaism, especially the Jewish people, they don't consider a child to be Jewish unless the mother is Jewish.
Oh, wow.
If the father's Jewish and the mother's a Gentile, that baby is not considered Jewish. So that's why a lot of women, when they marry a Jewish husband, if they want to raise the children Jewish, they'll convert. And it's more than just, you know, we can raise them with the same philosophies. It's really a traditional thing, which I believe comes down to, okay, it's the mom running the show in the human world, and it's the mom running the show in the spirit world as well. So they're the first ones that come, and they're always on at the patient's left foot. They're in a bed, for instance, like you said, like your grandmother was on the left side. Incidentally, the left side is the feminine side of the body. The masculine side's the right side. So no coincidence that they're always on the left. And then the closest paternal spirit on the maternal side shows up. So it would be the person's dad, or if he's deceased, it would be their maternal grandfather. If he's deceased, it would be the maternal great-grandfather, always on the maternal line that's there. And then they call in the angels and the other spirits that arrive. So angels show up next and they form a circle around the person who's dying with the parents' spirits or grandparents' spirits at the person's feet. They're the anchor to that circle. Angels look to me like these big 6-7 foot tall beings, wings, white gown, belted at the waist with a rope, bare feet. Is that what they look like? Well, that's how I was taught they look.
Right.
From the statuary and the paintings and stuff. 12 years of Catholic schools, that's what we're taught angels look like. And most of us have in the Western culture been taught that. That's what angels look like. To somebody certainly that grew up in an indigenous tribe in the middle of the Amazon, you're going to see angels maybe as just a blob of red energy or something. But we're always going to picture things through our own frame of reference. Our own human frame of reference. And then this circle, as the person gets closer to death, the circle starts to open and turns into a horseshoe and then eventually a straight line. That is the line of demarcation between the spirit world and the human existence. And I call that the spirit crowd control, angelic crowd control, because it's like they're holding all the thousands and thousands of spirits kind of in one area, as I perceive it. A couple of nuances that happen that are really remarkable, I believe. About phase six-ish or so, there are two additional angels that are on either side of what I call the spirit bubble. As somebody is dying, the first thing that happens is their spirit starts to exit their body and it attaches to the top of the head and it looks like a speech bubble or a cartoon caption bubble where the character's friends or their words or their thoughts are. And then come about phase nine, between phase nine and phase 10, those angels on either side of the spirit bubble, their wings start to move. And they remind me of a giant owl, silent, slow, rhythmic, but very powerful, creating a lot of drag. And the first time I saw this was again with my mother, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. I don't know what's happening here, but I know it's going to be a profound component of her transitioning, her exiting her body. And as they do that over time, there's a vortex that forms above the head. And it feels like it has a lot of suction to me. I can hear it. It's loud.
Wow.
I can feel it. It reminds me of going through the car wash when you're still in the car and they turn the dryer on at the end and mm-hmm. it's sucking all the water off your car. You know, you can wow. see it, you can hear it, you can feel it.
Right.
And that's what the spirit goes through to help it evacuate from the body. The interesting thing about that is near-death experiencers pretty much to a T say, I felt like I went through a tunnel
mm-hmm.
and I could feel a lot of suction. Well, that's what they're doing. The other really interesting thing I think is that movement of the angel's wings on either side of the spirit bubble are what creates the pull, the upward pull, the draft, the suction. So when I was writing angelic attendance, Amber, just for kicks, I thought, well, I'm just going to research vortex, owl, wings. Those were my search words.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out there's this thing called the wingtip vortex that mm-hmm. causes lift in anything that flies, whether that be a bug, a bird, a plane, a kite, a jet, whatever. There's this phenomenon that happens where the air goes over the wing and comes underneath, and it creates a vortex and it causes lift. And so I thought, isn't that interesting? Science is catching up with woo-woo here.
Right.
And so if you do an internet search on wingtip vortex, you will see thousands, if not tens or more thousands of aeronautical engineering drawings, papers, textbooks. It's a phenomenon that every pilot knows very well. And I thought that was remarkable. And then those angels on either side of the spirit bubble are the ones that escort the person's spirit to heaven, which is non-physical, mm-hmm. nirvana, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And heaven looks to me like this big yellowish, whitish plasma wall. And when we go through it, it immediately closes back up
mm-hmm.
instantly with no trace. And then all of our deceased loved ones and family and all of that are on the other side of the wall. So that's what that guy was talking about. My client's dad was saying, yeah, it was like a magic trick.
And you hear about people who have near-death experiences too. You know, we go to the light. It's like, I even remember when I was giving birth of seeing my grandma, all these people, and I had a C-section and ended up having to go under. And I was like, oh, I'm so happy to be with you. It's like, and they're like, you have to go back. And I'm like, no, I don't want to go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because your brain was relaxed.
Yes.
They were letting you know they were around you. And interestingly enough, when I scan somebody energetically that's in the operating room, there are always deceased loved ones and spirits that are in the room supporting them. And there are guardian angels over the head of anesthesia. And there are spirits that are doctors that are advising the actual surgeons. So it's really wonderful that you saw that when you were in surgery.
Well, and I think that they're always with us. We just have to be open to seeing and believing and, you know, communicating.
I agree.
As well. Were there specific angels? Like, were there archangels or were there just obviously several?
They look like Stepford Wife angels to me. Are you old enough to remember the movie Stepford Wives?
Yes.
They made all these wives that all look the same and sound yes. the same and all that. They're all a representation mm-hmm. of that angelic energy appearing in a way that I can recognize who they are. So I do see cherubs every now and again. I do see archangels every now and again, not in the death configuration. I don't, or in the dying configuration. I've seen it one time, and that was when St. Pope John Paul died. I did an instant replay of his death. And there's a chapter about that in the book.
Yeah.
And there were cherubs there. Sometimes I'll see cherubs at the funeral
mm-hmm.
that are over the casket. Oftentimes I'll see baby spirits, miscarried babies that died as infants, their spirits will be there with the person who's passed.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then the other thing that is important to note too, Amber, is that there are always pet spirits that are there. Mm-hmm. of the animals that the person may have had throughout their lifetime, whether it be as a child or even into adulthood. And it's really fun when I get to see farm animals because I'll say, did your grandmother grow up on a farm? Because there's like horses and ducks and geese and pigs and cows. And they'll say, oh yeah. And I'll describe what they look like. And they'll say, oh yeah, that's Bessie, her cow. And that's Molly, her pig. And that's whoever. So
it's really
fun when that happens. And it's very reassuring for the family because it just lets them know that their loved ones are surrounded by their deceased loved ones and pets and angels.
Mm-hmm. Did, when your mother was passing, did you tell her what you were seeing?
I did not. My mother was not able to communicate. I talked to her telepathically. Mm-hmm. Right before she died about 10 minutes before the rest of the family arrived. I was talking to the nurses in the evening after everybody went home, after we had dinner, and we went out for dinner and then came back, and the nurses said, yeah, she's gonna, again, for about the fifth time, she's going to be around a long time. And I said, well, how will I know when she's getting close? Because again, I'd never been through this before.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, her breathing can get labored. Her feet can turn blue. Her feet and her hands can turn mm-hmm. blue. I said, okay, fine. Well, I fell asleep at about probably 4:30 in the morning. And then I woke up because her breathing was very labored.
Mm-hmm.
And I lifted the sheet and saw her feet were very blue.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and got the nurses and I said, I think she's transitioning. Please come see. And they said, yeah, you need to call the family. And so I did. And they arrived about 10 minutes after she passed, but I held her hand when she was taking her last breaths. And I said, everybody's on the way. If you want to wait for them, fine. If you don't, it's fine. I'm here. You know, you go, you watch over us, all of that. And that's what she chose to do. And I believe that was just such a parting gift for her, Amber, to give me and therefore humanity with mm-hmm. all of this information. She was mm-hmm. an educator and she knew that I could see this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really remarkable. What a gift.
Absolutely. After you taking, you know, all this time to finally put the book together and be comfortable, you know, in sharing this, now you have people actually that reach out to you when their loved ones are transitioning. And you can do this remotely.
Oh yeah, I always do it remotely.
Yeah.
I mean, the times that I've done it in person are probably 3, my mother and my father and my sister, just because I happen to be there. No, it's always remote. And anybody can do this, Amber.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to AskJulieRyan.com, go to the 12 Phases of Transition tab, mm-hmm. there is a graphic of all the 12 phases. Download it. It's a free download. Download it. Put it on your phone. And then if you have a loved one who's dying, all you have to do is just say, what phase of transition is Aunt Susie in? And you'll hear a number come into your head as fast as you can snap your fingers, refer to the chart, and then you'll be able to see, here's the graphic of these spirits mm-hmm. that are around her, how they're positioned. And if you see that Aunt Susie's moving through 6, 7, 8, pretty at a 7, 8, 9, whatever, at a pretty quick clip, then you'll know to call in the family. I think it's also important to mention that everybody goes through the 12 phases of transition, regardless of how they die.
Mm-hmm.
If they die very instantly, like in the case of a homicide or suicide, or if they die over a prolonged period of days, weeks, months, even years, everybody goes through the 12 phases. And time doesn't exist in the spirit world.
Right.
So an instant is the same as 2 years in the spirit world. There's no differentiation between the two.
So if someone is a, say, car accident, quick death, would the transition just happen a little faster? Or no, because there's time doesn't exist.
Time doesn't exist. So it's like 2 years versus worth of transitioning happen in less than a nanosecond as we understand time.
Yes.
Okay. It's just not even instant. It's faster than instant. Again, we try and wrap our human minds around that from a frame of reference that we'd have, and we don't have one. So mm-hmm. it's hard for us to understand. When people tell me, well, I just can't understand. I just don't understand that. I'll say, okay, go to the place where, is it feasible? Mm-hmm. And usually we can say, okay, I don't know for sure, but certainly it's a possibility. I entertain that it's a possibility. And I love Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. I love his one of my favorite quotes is when he says, just because we don't understand it or believe it doesn't mean it isn't true. And I think this is a great example of that.
Absolutely. I think there's so much magic and the power of just energy and spirit is so great. And I think that the world is transitioning to being more open to, you know, getting outside of the box mentality that we've been in. I kind of want to hit on, you know, coming back to your intuition and your psychic gifts. Like, we all have that. We all have it on a different level. It's just kind of, and we all are born with unique gifts. Do you have any pointers for anyone who's trying to expand their intuition or their psychic ability?
Short of taking one of my classes.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of pointers on that. Our heads are big satellite dishes. They receive and transmit frequencies. My classes, by the way, are all on Zoom or online. So
okay.
Person. Our heads are big satellite dishes, Amber, and they receive and they transmit frequencies. Every spirit has a frequency that they keep throughout all of their lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And so in order to get in touch with a spirit, whether it was a human or a dog or a tree or a whatever, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
All you have to do is think of that person or animal or plant, and that tunes your satellite dish head to their frequency, much like a radio station. And it doesn't matter whether you knew them or not, because mm-hmm. all spirits have a frequency. It doesn't matter whether they're attached to a body or not.
Mm-hmm.
We can telepathically communicate with our loved ones when they're in other areas, when they're dying and they're not able to communicate themselves. We can communicate telepathically. Certainly, lots of indigenous cultures like the Aboriginal people mm-hmm. in Australia, they've been communicating telepathically across thousands of miles for millennia. And it's just a matter of developing that. So when we have a thought about somebody and they text us or we run into them or we get an email from them and we say, oh, what a coincidence. I was just thinking of you. And here you are. Well, no uh-huh. coincidence there. You're tuned to their satellite station and you're bringing in their frequency
uh-huh.
so you can communicate. So everybody can do it. Everybody does do it, whether we're cognizant of it or not. The other thing that's really helpful, I believe, back to when we were having the discussion about dreams uh-huh. is when you're in grief, especially when you've lost a loved one, all you have to do is just ask that person before you go to bed, ask that spirit, hey, grandma, meet me at the whatever diner in my dreams.
Yeah.
And they'll show up because oftentimes it's easier for them to communicate with us in our dreams because, again, back to that reset,
mm-hmm.
our energy levels reset at night when we sleep. And people will say, well, I tried it and it didn't work. I said, how many times did you try it? I said, once. I said, well, you know,
right.
try it for 2 months straight.
Right.
Try it for 60 days straight. See what happens. Expect it.
I know for me, I've only called on my grandmother a few times because I feel like I don't want to bother her.
It's not a bother. She's around you all the time.
I know.
Yeah, no. No, it's not a bother.
That's like total ego. Yeah.
Well, it's total human perspective.
Yes.
Is what
yes.
it is. And we're made in the image and likeness of God in spirit form, mm-hmm. I believe. And our loved ones are everywhere all at the same time, like God is everywhere all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so your grandmother can be with you. She can be with her other loved ones all at the same time. And we think, how's that work? Well, we don't know because we don't have a human perspective for that. But yeah, call her in anytime. You just think of her and she immediately comes in right away. Did you watch the TV show Bewitched as a kid?
Here or there, yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, for those that don't know what Bewitched is, it was a TV show in the 60s and 70s when I was growing up. And there was a witch that was married to a mortal, you know, to a human. And she would call mother, and her mother Endora, the character of her mother, would come in right away, or Uncle Arthur or Dr. Bombay. Those are other characters that were in the TV show. And they would immediately arrive. Somebody who wrote that screenplay to that TV show knew woo-woo.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Because
that's how it works.
That is so true. That is so true. Thank you for bringing that back. I want to get into your medical and intuitiveness. Like, how does that come to you? And how do you see, I know you see energy through the third eye and physically, but what does that look like? Like when you see an aura or you see something wrong with someone or a disease in the body?
It looks like an MRI or an X-ray or a CT scan.
Okay.
So I see body parts.
Okay.
And didn't come in like that. I go through that journey in my book in the first chapter. It came in originally as colors and moving energy I could see. And then it started showing up as like a blueprint almost. I saw these royal blue lines of things. And like a house or a building blueprint. Mm-hmm. And then the more I did it, I started seeing actual organs. And some of them were organs that I didn't know what they were. I mean, I'd hear it in my head in a divine download, like, check the liver. And then this organ would show up. And then I bought an anatomy book with big color drawings of illustrations of, okay, here's what a kidney looks like. Here's what a liver looks like. Here's what the vascular system looks like, so that I had a frame of reference. Now, keep in mind, I was in surgery a lot in my career, but I wasn't necessarily looking at it from up above, you know, from an observation tower going, oh, he's working on his liver. I wasn't. So I educated myself on that. So when I see cancer, a woman called into my show last night. We do it every Thursday night at 8 Eastern, and we do live to tape. So people call in from all over the world, and mostly domestically because it's 4 in the morning in Europe when we're filming it. And her mom had cancer and it was metastasized. And when I see somebody that has metastasized cancer, it reminds me of looking at a dairy cow because the cow's white and it has black blotches on it. Mm-hmm. That's what cancer looks like in the body. I'll see a hologram of the body and then I'll see these black blotches. And I know that's cancer. I saw a torn rotator cuff on somebody last night who called into the show. I saw, what else were we working on? Mold. Somebody had a bunch of mold exposure. I can see that in the energy field. I can see leaky gut. I can see ulcers. I can see broken bones, torn ligaments, viral infections, bacterial infections, all of that stuff. And so something's identified, Amber, and then immediately thereafter, there's some type of energetic healing that begins. And that can take the form of something getting added, something getting removed. I watch procedures all the time energetically that emulate what I saw in the operating room for all those decades. Sometimes I see healings that use methodologies and devices that haven't been invented yet. A lot of stem cell energy is used to help generate new body parts. And that's fascinating to me because early on when I was doing this, I would see organ transplants, like if there was a kidney that was failing.
Yeah.
And I'd see in my mind's eye the donor patient, the patient with a failing kidney. I'd watch the kidney get harvested from the donor patient, you know, the diseased kidney get removed, that the whole thing like they do in the OR. Well, now I never see that. I haven't seen that probably for 5 or 6 years. I just see stem cell energy generate a new kidney next to the kidney that's diseased. And there's almost a template or a mold, like a jello mold, that the stem cell energy goes into. And there's always a vortex above the stem cell energy being used, and I'll watch a new kidney get generated. And then I'll watch all the plumbing get clamped off and get cut. And then I'll watch the diseased kidney get removed and the new kidney get implemented. And then the plumbing get hooked back up. And this can happen in less than a couple of minutes as I'm describing it to my client. And the cool thing about the stem cell energy is it'll regenerate any body part we need. And so sometimes new organs show up on subsequent scans. And I've had doctors over the years call me because they've seen it on an x-ray or something. They'll say, what the heck are you doing? How does this stuff work?
Wow.
So that's kind of fun. Kind of freaks them out when that happens. I mean, like, you can't grow a new spleen. Well, obviously I did, because here's this.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're doing the healing after someone calls in or has a session with you, do that person's guides come and assist, or are there like certain helper friends that come in the spirit world that are always there doing the work?
Great question. It's just spirit working through me and with me. I don't see individual spirits. It's just the collective spirit.
Okay.
I believe the individual spirits are to give us a human frame of reference. Mm-hmm. So your grandmother, with whom you were very close, my Meemaw was the most important person in my life growing up, my grandmother. They show up as individual spirits, but they are spirit. Mm-hmm. It's all one big energy mass that can show up in different forms to make it more understandable for us.
Okay.
So I don't see now in the operating room, when I'm focused, I'll see the guardian angel over the head, all of that. When I'm doing a healing, it's just spirit energy working through me and with me to help facilitate healing.
I love that. Do you think it could be something as simple as sitting in a meditation and working with your team of guides and saying, upgrade my DNA or fix this part of me that, and just really having the faith?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do DNA healings every day. I've talked to 4 clients today already. I've got 2 more that I'm going to talk to after we're done chatting. And I've done 3 DNA healings out of 4 already as part of the healing sequence. So there will be something will be identified. There'll be healing. Something else will be identified. There'll be healing. Something else will be identified. There'll be healing. Goes very fast. Things show up in order of importance. So when I'm scanning somebody on a medical scan, I'll always go in blind first because I want to see where the energy is going to go. Sometimes it goes to a situation where it's asymptomatic and we're heading off a problem at the pass before it becomes a problem. Sometimes it's a situation where we're reverse engineering symptoms and it's showing me the root cause. Somebody that's got mold exposure. I had a mold exposure client this morning, her son, all of a sudden starting to have epileptic seizures at 18 out of the blue. And I said, he's full of mold. I got him on my radar. And I said, where's the mold? And she said, well, I don't think we have an issue in our house. I said, tell me about his school. And she goes, well, you know, I would have no way of knowing. And then she gasped and she said, oh my gosh, they started doing a renovation and his school is very old and they're tearing down walls and taking out ductwork and stuff like that. I said, I promise you there's a mold toxicity situation that he's being exposed to. And she said, but they're seeing lesions that are causing these epileptic situations. And I said, yeah, mold can cause that.
Yeah.
But again, that's not something that the doctors are looking for because they haven't been educated to look for
it. Right.
But I can get him on my radar and in a New York second, I can say, this kid's full of mold. You got to get him to somebody. She was from Virginia and I know of a doctor there who's a professor at a medical school who's come up with a mold test that's revolutionary. And then I'll always give resources after I'm working with a client. They'll always get a follow-up email with a bunch of resources. Okay, the healing happened on the energetic level. Here's what you need to do on the human level to help facilitate healing.
Oh, so much goodness there. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I know we're getting close on time and there's so much that I didn't even cover.
But I wanted to share, you have your podcast, your live radio show, where people can call in and get help and ask their questions. Typically, how many people are you able to connect with in an hour long show?
Usually 6 to 7.
Okay.
Because it's live to tape, and it's live to tape for radio, for talk radio. So we have commercial breaks. So I'll usually get 6 to 7, and then we edit those out for the podcast and the YouTube videos. Okay. So we record live on Thursday nights from 8 to 10 Eastern, 8 to 9 Eastern, 7 to 8 Eastern, excuse me. No. Yeah. 8 to 9. Cause I'm in the central time zone. Sorry. Okay. One moment.
I'll put everything Eastern in the show notes too.
Seven to eight Central, 8 to 9 Eastern, okay. 5 to 7 Pacific. Yes. Okay. There you go. And all of that's, everything's on Ask Julie Ryan, all my social media, everything's Ask Julie Ryan. We always post the day of the show. Hey, show night. Remember, call in with your question. I always have way more callers than I can get on. And I always say, call back next week and I'll do my best to get on as many as I can. And so that's fun. I also do what's called Ask Julie Ryan Live once a month on the fourth Tuesday of the month. So it'll be on the 27th this month in December. And then that's like, kind of like my show without commercials. And we'll take a 10 minute break. That goes 2 hours, but everybody's participating in the healing that's on the Zoom call. It's a Zoom call. And I give away a bunch of free prizes, free sessions, free classes, free books, stuff like that. So that's fun. We do that. People submit questions online. So there's several ways. I give away a free session every month. All you have to do is listen to my show and leave a review. And then we do a drawing every month and somebody wins a free session. And so just trying to do things to help get people information, you know, as one person, I only have so much bandwidth.
And you offer courses. Do you offer courses where people can then study under you to
do
some of what you're doing?
Yes. I have an online course that is how to communicate with spirit and about the 12 phases of transition, which everybody's going to need. We're all going to lose loved ones. We're all going to die ourselves. I have people say, this needs to be taught in the schools. I go, yeah, well, I agree. And then I do a quarterly class where it's live via Zoom and with people from all over the world. I limit that to 12 people because it's very, very comprehensive. And it's the first part of it is lecture and discussion for an hour. And then the second part is all practicum. So right out of the gate, it's 4 Saturdays in a row, right out of the gate, everybody's able to do this. It really amazes people who think they have no abilities in the first week. They're doing it in the practice session. And then all of my trainings, Amber, have practice sessions that go with them. That's the most important part of learning this. You can read something, you can hear something, you can see something until you do it. And you get validation for what you're receiving, it's not going to sink in. It's kind of like learning to drive a car. You can watch a video about how to drive a car. You can read a book about it, but till you're behind the wheel driving that car, you don't really get it and implement what you've learned.
And then you also are able to communicate with pets and access past lives.
Yeah. Those are
so fun. Does all of that come up in your healing sessions as well?
It does. So when I'm with somebody for an hour, we will jam pack as much in as we can get. I talked to a woman yesterday in an hour session and we did a quick medical thing on her first. And then she had some questions about past lives. And so we got, how I do past lives is, what do you want to know? And in her case, it was a situation where she wanted to know if she was a warrior.
Wow.
I said, you mean like Xena warrior princess kind of thing? And she said, yeah. She said, I've been through a lot in my life and I'm still standing. And I feel like a warrior. And so it was so wild. So much fun. Past lives are so much fun because this is a great example. We got that she lived in Brussels. It was 1947. Her name was Marguerite, and I forget the last name. And she was a socialite. And this was post-World War II, and we got a little bit of what was going on and what happened in her life and that kind of thing. Well, while I'm getting all this information downloaded into my head from Spirit, she's doing an internet search on this name. So she put Marguerite Smith in the Google Brussels 1947, and she came up.
Oh, wow.
She came up. That wow. She was able to find the woman that she was in that past life in historical documents. Yeah. And oftentimes we can do that. And then what we'll do is we'll say, okay, how does this correlate with what's going on in her current life? And then I'll ask my client, does that resonate with you? And inevitably it does.
Yeah. That's so good. Well, I know I'm way over on time. Before we wrap up, do you have anything you'd like to share with the audience or about like what's going on in the world? Any positive uplifting message that you think the collective needs to hear right now?
Sure. Everybody has the ability to communicate with Spirit. Everything unfolds perfectly, even when we don't think it is at the time. We're always being led. We create out of the contrast. And if something feels like it's going to harm you or kill you in the next couple of minutes, change the conditions. Otherwise, it's a fake fear. I call it the 2-minute rule. Actually, I have a book coming out next week. That's the fourth in my children's book series called Angel Messages for Truth, the 2-minute rule. And it's about how most of us spend our lives worrying about stuff that's an illusion, and we're making stuff up in our heads that's never going to happen. I think it was Abraham Lincoln said that. We spend our lives worried about stuff that never happens. Mm-hmm. What a wasted time.
So true. The stories we tell ourselves, right?
We're envisioning stuff we don't want. You don't want to do that. If you're going to make stuff up, make up something that feels good that you want to happen.
Right. So true. And I love that you're offering to children because, man, they're our future.
Well, I've had so many moms over the years, and that's how the children's book series began. Say, please, can you put something down that will help me explain to my child what happens when somebody dies? Can you explain, how does my child see spirits and know things about deceased loved ones that I don't even know? And this kid never met my grandfather. And how does my child know about past lives and know details that we can corroborate with online historic documents? And again, this child can't read yet. So that's what we've done. And they're beautifully illustrated. They are maybe 15 sentences, short sentences, short to the point, succinct. They get it. And so that's how that all originated.
And children are, you know, they come in still knowing. They haven't lost the, so a lot of times, young toddlers will see a deceased one or remember a past life. Or my youngest told me one time, she's like, Mom, in our last lives, we were sisters. Okay. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, and most people will say, oh, honey, that's just your imagination.
Right. Or, and it's not.
Or little Sally has a really robust imagination. Well, little Sally's actually knows this stuff. It's just mommy and daddy don't know it. So until adults tell them, oh, that's not really true, that's your imagination, or teachers or friends.
Right.
And when friends say, man, you're weird. What do you mean you can see, you know, this grandpa that's in your room playing airplanes with you? You're just weird. And then they learn to shut it down. And then and then throughout life, they can bring it back and just develop and enhance it. However, when we can validate our children, what it does is it gives them another set of problem-solving skills that helps them enhance their lives in just immeasurable ways.
That's so true. So true. And I think we're all being called to really own our gifts right now.
I think always people say, well, the world is so divided. It's never been this divided before. And I'll say, have you ever heard of the Civil War? If you're an American, it's just that we have 24/7 news cycles that have it in front of you if you watch it. And it's all about the ad dollars. The more eyeballs, the more they can scare people, the more eyeballs they have watching the shows and watching the videos and clickbait, the more ad dollars they can sell because it goes on how big the audience is that's watching. Yes. So it's all about creating fear to create ad revenue at the end of the day.
And when we're in fear, we're not in love. Yeah, turn it off.
Well, you lose perspective. You lose clarity when you're in fear. The blood drains from your head, it's going to your heart and your extremities so you can run away from whatever the threat is.
So true. Yeah. Turn it off.
Right.
Stay in your bubble of love and light and rainbows.
That's right. Yeah. May I share a gift with your
I would love that. Yes, yes.
Okay. Anybody listening that would like a free digital and audiobook download of my book, Angelic Attendance, What Really Happens as We Transition from This Life into the Next, just go to AskJulieRyan.com and go to the Ask Julie button. And say, hey, I heard you on Amber's show and I would love a free copy of your book, and we will send you the link and hope you enjoy it. Please share it with your family and friends so we can get this information out there about what happens when somebody dies. And yes, it just brings so much comfort to people.
So healing. So healing. Thank you so much, Julie, for being on the podcast. And thank you for your generous offering. I'm going to have you stay on while I wrap up the show. Just I want to share something with you. I will list all of your links, your website, all of that in the show notes so that the listeners can find you and reach out to you. I'm very, very grateful for having you on. So thank you very much.
Oh, sending everybody lots of love from Sweet Home, Alabama. Yes.
Remember, everyone, when you awaken you, you remember you. Namaste. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I wanted to share that I was reading your book this morning.
Yeah. Sorry about the comment. I tried to mute.